Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's News Talk 830 WCCO's Live Outdoors
with Ron Shera and Mike Max.
Welcome back. I always love to talk about places I've just been. Ron has an outdoor story or two to tell about them. And San Jose, San Francisco, that area. But you said, I guess I'd never heard anything of it, but I didn't know if people took those fishing boats out from there. Sometimes they do, like in Seattle and whatnot, and go catch. But you said no, not so much.
Huh? Well, I don't know about San Francisco. You just don't hear much about deep sea fishing off of San Francisco, Seattle. Yeah, I mean, there's salmon. They go out there. San Diego. Yeah, there's a pretty good yellowfin tuna, blackfin tuna off the coast there. But otherwise, you don't hear a lot about from San Francisco, but. As you mentioned, you have to step over all the homeless bodies that are there on the sidewalk.
Yeah, I mean, it's rampant there. They got a big problem. And you told me, and I didn't get over there, otherwise I'd have tried it, but you said you didn't think it was that hard to swim from Alcatraz. You thought that's where those guys had escaped. You wanted me to try that.
Well, I thought you could make headlines if you had, huh?
If you'd approved. You want to make sure people know who you are, right?
Well, if you'd approved that it is possible
that's
to
all
swim.
Saying, right? And you said as good a shape as you're in, I bet you could do it.
Yeah, exactly. Because you work out, I know. I mean, you're my hero. And a lot of very famous prisoners have tried to escape and never to be seen again, and they didn't know if they made it or not. No. You, Mike Max, could have answered that for all of history.
And that's what you're asking me to do, and I just couldn't get over there.
Really?
So the next time you say just go for it, and you say all you need is a swimsuit, you don't even need a wetsuit or anything, huh?
I can't wait till you go out there to San Francisco again. We'll schedule your swim.
I listened to CCO radio this morning, and somebody said that how bad was the Vikings game was the question. It was so bad that in the fourth quarter, there were actually people that went out to see Ron Shera at the Sportsman Show.
that's very funny.
Yes, thank you. But you were there at the Sportsman Show. Give us the update.
I was. Well,
kind of tells us what the appetite is for the upcoming seasons.
Well, the sports show is the sports show. It's always great to be out there with the boats and the resorts and the fishing tackle and the whole thing. But what a zoo it was.
Really?
Oprah was there Saturday morning.
She was at the sports show?
No, she was at the at the center there.
Well, why didn't she ever come over and do the kids fishing thing?
I should have, yeah. I couldn't find a place to park. There were 17,000 women, mostly women, there at 9 o'clock Saturday morning.
So far, I like what I hear.
Yeah, and you wouldn't have been able to find a place to park. I talked to two exhibitors. It took them an hour and a half to find a place to park.
So they didn't account for this?
They weren't happy, no. Well, I don't know who manages things over there.
Oh, she told me to give me my VIP pass.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't have worked. Oprah had all of those. it was kind of a mess. But the show goes on. But Saturday, my kids' deal was Saturday from 11 to 1:30. So we had about 80, 90 kids there, which not as many as usual. But Sunday we had 120 kids. But anyway, by 2:30, the old sports show started to thin out a little bit as folks were anticipating the great Vikings game. Now, the game started at 3:30. I'm guessing that 4:30, a quarter to 5, the ratings went down.
Hey, I just got this in. Josh Donaldson signs with the Twins, 4-year deal. How much did he sign for, Christina?
I'll go find out.
Yeah, that's right. But the bottom line is he just signed with the Twins. So they got, now we know why Sano is done. He's going to play first base, and Donaldson, they got done at the end of the day. Yeah, the most important thing is Josh Donaldson becomes a Twin, and the Bomb Bats will be alive, man.
Yeah, I guess so.
From the heels.
Well, that's great news.
Yeah.
I wonder if he likes to fish.
We'll find out soon enough, won't we?
Yeah. For sure. You and I should go down to Florida and scout that out.
They have a pitcher, Steven Gonsalves, who's since moved on, but he was with him last year, and he used to love going deep sea fishing with his what do you call it? Not a harpoon, but
downriggers.
When you go under, you go underwater and you spear.
Oh, scuba diving.
Spear fishing.
Scuba fishing.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
and he did that. He was a pitcher for the yeah.
Yeah, I've never done that. I scuba dive. I have a qualified to scuba, but I've never shot any fish. I've thought about that many times.
When you're sitting down there and you thinking this.
No,
when
I'm sitting on my lax. I mean. Yeah. Oh, well, if you can't get them with a hook and line, maybe I can get them with a spear, you know?
Yep.
Underwater spear. The sports show, now we got, not this week, but next week, the big boat show in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
So we're off and running. Boat sales last weekend. I talked to a couple of dealers. It's hard to say.
Can you tell much at this show? How much of a gauge do you?
Well, nobody wants to say too much about how business is, but the two I talked to said, they sold some boats, maybe not as much as a year ago, but they sold some boats. So, things you can't keep going up, so to speak. But
do you get any idea of the economy or appetite for outdoor economy at this show?
No, not. There, it's again. If you talk to resorters, etc., they're all how's business? Oh, good, good, good. So, and frankly, it's none of my business. So, you can't press it too far.
Their business isn't your business.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
but you're going to tell by the crowds and
yeah. This is Minnesota, man. There's always going to be crowds for sports shows,
yes.
And
that's a well established tradition.
Yeah, for sure, and. When the sports show's not on, people are outside doing things. So, I mean, we're blessed there. We have a great outdoor lifestyle in this state.
Was there anything that jumped off that every once in a while they'll have a new something where you hadn't seen before? You thought you'd seen it all, and all of a sudden somebody will have something. Was there anything like that?
Well, it's difficult for me to see it all, but I did come across a person that started, I think, a really unique. Now, you wouldn't be interested in this. I'm going to have him on as a guest in a future show, but called Rip-A-Lip is his company, and he created an internet course, so to speak, that you can use to if you want to learn how to better run your Lowrance or your Garmin or
yeah.
What. And so he created a website for that, which is very basic. If you want more advanced and you sign up for $10 a year is all. I looked at it last night, and it's very thorough. I was very impressed because just reading it, I'd like to sit there in my boat with the screen and go through some stuff. That's the best way to do it. But just what I do know about my Lowrances, I use Lowrances. Is very thorough, and I learned some things just reading the chapters, so to speak. So that was the most unique thing, and it wasn't necessarily really new, but still fairly new. So if you use a rock and a string,
you wouldn't
need any of this stuff.
What about my frozen night crawler idea?
No, that's
about that?
Nobody asked about your frozen night crawlers. I don't quite understand how you could. Freeze dried, maybe. Is that what you meant? You were going to freeze dry the night?
Yeah, I just freeze them. I go out in the summer and get a bunch of them, throw them in the freezer.
Oh, you do? And they come back to life when you bring them out? Is that how you do that?
I haven't thought through everything yet.
Yeah. There's a lot you haven't thought through. So we just take it like that. Hey, you know what we have coming up here?
What?
We talk about Lake of the Woods, we talk about Mille Lacs, we talk about Upper Red, and a great lake we forget about is Winnie. And so I saw Craig from McCardle's Resort up at the sports show the other day. I go, we gotta talk to that guy. So he's going to be joining us after the break, and then later we're going to talk to a guy. I want him to train you. He's an outdoor trainer.
Is this guy that teaches retrieving and fetching?
No, winter camping. I think you'd be awesome at that. Go out there and just, see what you could withstand with a minimum of equipment, survival kind
Again,
of.
Now, I don't know how you'd do it. I'd do it just with an igloo. I'd build my own igloo.
Scott.
What would you do?
I'd watch you build the igloo.
Camping, what would you
do?
Yeah,
I'd watch you, and then I'd check into the Holiday Inn. But Yeah, Scott Oath is his name, and he calls himself the Bull Moose Patrol. Very interesting. But he's going to join us and talk a little bit about winter survival, winter camping, and I'm going to nominate you to join his class.
Okay, I got this. This is a personal text from a guy who hunts. He says not far from you, and he says, ask Ron why the population of wild turkeys in the Black Hills is down.
It was down.
It was.
Yeah. I think they had a bad hatch or two, but my guides from this past year did okay, but they said they saw a lot of jakes this past year in 2019. And that means now this spring they will be a two-year-old gobblers ready to get their hands and answer calls. So if the number of jakes that they saw is any indication, the population should be good this spring.
Have you seen this ebb and flow before?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You have, just like pheasants or ducks or whatever, you've got spring times where just the chance of bad weather hitting at the wrong time hits and you lose a hatch. And a hen pheasant, a hen turkey, let's say the first time they try to nest, they might lay 15 eggs. Well, maybe something happens. Severe cold snap, a skunk finds it, a raccoon finds it, it's damaged. So she will then re-nest. She'll try again somewhere else. But this time, maybe she only lay 8 eggs. And so if that's successful, but that's half of what would have been if she'd have been successful the first time. So, and they might even try a third time, depending on how late it gets in the summer. They have sort of a innate, they kind of know when to quit. You know what I mean? But they will keep trying. And that's why a lot of people say, oh, the hens had 2 hatches this year. No, they didn't. What happened was you see some older young birds because they were successful the first time. And then there was a different hen that was successful her second time. And so those chicks are smaller. So, but people interpret that as one hen having multiple broods during the summer. That don't happen.
Now, I saw this video. It's pretty cool. This 3 coyotes come and they surround a cat up against its house. And the cat refuses to give in.
House cat?
Pouncing, yeah. He's pouncing at the coyotes. And in essence, finally scares them off because they keep coming at her and she go right back at them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's 3 coyotes. It's not quite a pack, but, you know, it's formidable, right?
Yep.
And it made me realize that this stuff happens probably every day outdoors. But have you ever seen anything like that? Have you ever seen a pack of?
Yes, I have. Yeah. I haven't seen coyotes around a house cat. But let me tell you, a house cat is a formidable foe.
Yeah.
The other thing, if the coyote was thinking of eating that cat, he's looking to see if it's vulnerable. And if he detects that it's not vulnerable and the cat is very defensive and the cat, 1 or 2 or 3, they'll go away. One morning, I'll never forget this. When I was in college, my parents lived on a little farmstead in northeast Iowa, and my dad woke me up one morning and he says, look it out there. And there we had a couple of domestic geese that were playing around in a puddle in the cornfield just across the
little flooded area or something
from the house. Yeah. They were in the puddle of the cornfield,
yep,
as geese might.
Yeah.
And there was a red fox trying to jump in and grab one of them. And they kept they'd chase him. They'd go at him with their wings.
They couldn't fly because they're domestic.
Right. But their wings would spread and they'd hiss and run at that red fox. The red fox would jump back. And finally the red fox says, yep. So much for that meal.
Action or something like that.
Well, I should have taken a crack at that old red fox, but he was just doing
it's
this
something
thing.
To watch, though, isn't it?
I mean,
it's nature, you know.
And one other, I didn't witness this, but a pheasant biologist said he did. He was watching a jackrabbit one time with his binoculars on the edge of a standing corn in an alfalfa field, and then he noticed there was a red-tailed hawk up in the tree, and suddenly the red-tailed hawk set sail and come swooping down on the jackrabbit. Now, the jackrabbit saw it and could have easily run right into the tall corn and been safe. But he didn't. He waited until the red-tailed hawk got right close. He rolled over on his back and kicked with his feet, knocked the red-tailed hawk over, tumbling. Red-tailed hawk got up, flew away.
Really?
Yeah.
And that's his way of saying, don't ever think about it again. Huh?
Right. You think everything's vulnerable out there.
Yeah.
No, that ain't true. Huh. We have to take a break, buddy.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I just wonder what they think when they see Ron when they're up above there.
They give up.
Tell them who's next, I'll get.
Well, we're gonna talk to Craig from McArdle's up in Lake Winnie, find out what's happening up there.
All right, Craig is next on Live Outdoors. Welcome back, Live Outdoors. Mike Max, Ron Sharon. We've got a very special next guest, Ron.
Well, we do. We don't talk to the folks up at beautiful Lake Winnebagoche too often, but I ran into him at the St. Paul Sports Show, and Craig Brown from McArdle's is with us. Good evening, Craig.
How you doing, guys?
We're doing great. Thank you for joining us.
No problem.
I talked to your lovely wife earlier today. She said you were out on the lake. Were you just cruising around, checking fishermen, or what were you up to?
Oh, no, we're trying to find ways to get around out there.
Is it tough?
Yeah, it's tough going there. We got a lot of snow. A lot of wet spots, pretty tough to, it's not quite thick enough where we want to take our plow trucks out.
Oh, yes.
So we really don't have any roads. It's pretty much snowmobile traffic only.
Uh-huh. So how much ice do you have underneath that snow and slush?
On the average, 11 to 14.
Yeah,
but
on
then
the
all
average.
Of a sudden you come across a pocket that's, 9.
Yeah. I wouldn't
then
want
there's to be, a 17-inch. So,
yeah.
It's tough.
I wouldn't want to be out there in a truck either if I hit that 7 or 8 or 9.
Right. And there's not a lot of we most everything we're pretty much finding is 14, but you don't want to take that chance.
So snowmobile is the way to go?
Oh, absolutely. And the guys that are doing it, they're catching a lot of fish. It's been really good. I just wish we could get to them.
Yeah, Winnie's always been famous for its perch. Is that what's happening again this winter, or you got some walleye action too?
No, it's mainly perch. The last 2 year classes, the 17s, the 18s on the walleyes are really strong. We're catching a ton of those. They're just the 17s are right at 12 inches, just not quite big enough to keep. But
right.
There's a lot of those. But the perch fishing has been really good. Just got to get to them.
Well, the lake was famous for its big perch. You still seeing those, or?
Oh, yeah, it's a nice mix. I mean, your keepers are going to be a lot of 9 to 11-inch stuff, and you get some bigger ones. But, I mean, realistically, after they put the walleye slot on, our perch were really strong, and then the walleyes caught back up, and it's kind of evened out. It's not like it was in the 80s and early 90s as far as the perch fishing. I mean, it's still strong, but now we got our walleyes, too. So it's
there
nice
you go.
Mix.
We're chatting with Craig Brown of McArdle's up on beautiful Lake Winnie. The summer, I mean, you must get a little frustrated because Winnie's a beautiful lake, great walleye fishing can be, yet you get overshadowed by Mille Lacs, or there are people who are talking about Leech Lake, or they're talking about Upper Red, or Lake of the Woods. How do you fight that?
That's tough because, we're as good as any of them. It's... Yeah, it's really tough, but with these year classes coming up, we're going to be hard to beat. They're really strong and they're healthy and they're there and we're catching them now.
Now you've got zebra mussels there, right?
Yeah, we did, and they got once they first populated, they got really strong. I mean, a lot of them, and I'm good friends with our lake biologist, and he shares info with all of us up here on Winnie, and there's been a pretty serious decline in them. I think they probably peaked and they found their happy medium. Of course, we had faucet snails, which filter and feed the same way. They kind of probably had a fist fight there. Looks like the zebra mussels won because we don't have any of those faucet snails left, but the numbers are way down.
Interesting.
Which is good because our
sometimes it takes a while for those snails to find out what's going on, too.
Right.
Get it? Snails move very slow.
Oh, yeah, that's very funny. Craig, you got to forgive my partner here.
I know.
He's a frustrated comedian, but I was going to say, Winnie used to be famous for its dark water and walleyes in 5 to 9 feet. You rarely fished, especially in the springtime. I did hear that because of the zebra mussels, the lake has really gotten clearer, and those walleyes aren't in that shallow water anymore. Is that true, or what? How do you answer that?
Yeah, it did get really clear. And, well, this summer, you know, they do the Secchi disc, and it was about half of what it was before. So with the decline of the zebra mussels, it stayed a little cloudier. But I tell you what, even with this clear water, if you fish the wind-blown shores, don't be afraid to get back in that 4 to 7 foot.
Okay.
Those fish still use that. It's hard to trust yourself to do that because you can look down and see the bottom, even in the waves.
Well, interesting for me, last spring, I think it was, I talked to a guy who was opened the season on Saturday on Winnie, caught all kinds of walleyes but couldn't hardly catch one to keep and eat. So he was disgusted with that. So then I was talking to my old buddy Gary Roach. I said, how'd you do for opener? Oh, we killed him. Lots of good eaters, 16, 17, 18. Yeah. I go, what? I don't know what to believe here.
I remember who you're talking to there. But
yeah, Mr. Walleye.
Yeah. Still, I mean, yeah, we had them tough springs. You know, 2 out of 3 years, there was still ice around the opener, and it was tough year classes. But I tell you what, we're making up for that, and the future looks really good.
Well, Craig, for anybody listening here, we've got a lot of winter fishing left. February, of course, but do you see an increase in fish biting in March? It's a great time to be on the ice. It's warmer, et cetera. Is that a good perch time, or what happens?
No. We catch them right through the winter, but the nice thing about March is on a normal year, which we don't see very often anymore, you know, the snow's down. You can drive wherever you want to go.
Yep.
You're more mobile. You got more warm fronts. The fish always seem to bite better when it's warming up.
Yep.
That's a great time. But
okay, I've had times I had to bring the suntan lotion on a March day in the ice.
Yeah, it's beautiful when you get a warm day out there. And I mean, it's good for travel and mobility, and it just everything works.
Well, Maxie fishes in the nude. You have to understand that.
That's so.
Well,
then
we
lots of suntan lotion.
Then for.
That way I know I'll have a lake to myself.
Yeah, you'll have a lot of room for yourself.
Well, Craig, we're going to let you go. Thanks for the update on Winnie. It's a lake that a lot of us tend to overlook, I guess, in a kind way. It's a wonderful fishing lake. I've had some great fishing there myself, and hope to see you this summer.
Hey, Craig.
All right, sounds good. Yeah, Mike.
This doorbell rings, and the guy goes up and he answers the door. He looks around, nothing. He looks down, and there's a snail. So he's frustrated that a snail come ring the doorbell. So he kicks the snail as far as he can see, right, into his lawn. All right. 2.5 years later, doorbell rings. Opens it up. There's a snail. Snail says, "What the hell are you doing?" Get it. 2.5 years later.
You're right, you're Ron. He's a struggling comedian. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
At least I'm a comedian. Yeah, thank you.
In his own mind. In his own mind. See you, Craig.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. When we come back, well, what, Ron? Tell him. Tease him.
Well, we're going to have the guy that started the big Bull Moose Patrol. Scott Oath is his name, and we're going to talk to him. He teaches winter survival and winter camping, and I've signed you up. So
I appreciate that.
We're going to find out some details about what you need to bring, huh?
As long as it doesn't involve heaters or anything artificial, I'm good.
I know.
You and
exactly.
I differ, man.
Exactly. You just rub your hands together.
No electronics needed. Stay with us.
Sports to the max.
Welcome back. Live Outdoors. We know this guy's going to tell the truth because we're going to put him under the oath.
Oh, wait, yeah, we will. Is he ready to go?
Yeah.
Okay.
What's his name?
Well, his name is Scott Oath, and more importantly,
now you get it. Now it all comes together for you.
Would you quit interrupting me? I'm trying to run a good show here. Bull Moose Patrol is a business he started, and I ran into him the other day. He was stopped by our TV production talking to Bill Shirk, and told me what he did, and I said, Scott, you got time to join us. So, Scott, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for the invite, Ron.
In a nutshell, first of all, I'd like to sign up my partner here, Mike Max, to go with you. The weather was going to be a high of -1. That would be a good day to take him out, to introduce him to
-1, I'm going to go at least 27 miles walking.
Okay. Anyway, well, he thinks he's a big, tough guy.
Yeah.
Scott.
You should let me take them out when it's really cold, though. Not
yeah, I mean, warm. Minus one. Yeah. Come on. Yeah, you and I know what that means. Nothing.
Oh, you're welcome. You name it. But, Scott, thank you for joining us. As I said, just in a nutshell, tell us what you do. I found it very interesting.
Yeah, well, I'm in the Twin Cities here is where home is, but I guide wilderness trips. So I take people on canoe camping trips, winter camping trips, backpacking. I teach classes, so outdoor skills around all those areas, a lot of wilderness survival classes. And also a big part of it is I write about these things. So I have a blog at bullmoosepatrol.com, and I try and champion all the wonderful outdoor areas we have in our region here, places to go. And then I also I love technique and learning skills, and so I layer on not just where to go and kind of reviews, but how to do it, how to have a good time and a safe time.
Must be a story behind the name Bull Moose Patrol.
Well, the story is this thing. I need a name, so I got a notepad and started scribbling down ideas. But that one hit, you know. I have a background in scouts, and so kind of the core unit is a patrol. You know, that's the team, that's the group you're taking out. That's our basic unit. And the idea is not just that patrol unit, but also that we're on patrol, seeking out new adventures, taking people out and exploring new areas. And the bull moose, you know, the moose is really, in my mind, is that just iconic image of the North Woods, just one of my favorite areas. You know, I love traveling to all kinds of outdoor regions, but my heart is really in the North Woods, the Canadian Shield country, and just the big bull moose is just the symbol of that region to me.
Very good. Well, listen, a lot of people say winter camping, oh my gosh, this guy likes to suffer or whatever. How did you get into winter camping, and what draws you to it?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'll tell you right up front, I don't like being cold. I hate it. I had many, many days and evenings, you know, as a youth, ice fishing, sitting in a tree, bow hunting with frozen fingers and toes, and hated it. But I love the outdoors. And if you do it well, you know, a couple of cool things about winter camping is it's beautiful out there. There's not many people out there. You don't have to necessarily go all that far to have a big adventure. But there is an art and the science to it. And I think that's part of what draws me to it is understanding and thinking through how to do it and how to do it well. And winter camping, everything takes more time. You're moving slowly, you have less daylight, and you really need to be, you know, it's like a chess match. You need to be thinking two or three moves ahead. And what I tell people is, hey, when we're going out there, we're doing a trip, there might be a few moments here and there where you're cold. You know, you're getting into or out of bed, you're adjusting your footwear, you're cooking or something like that. But you'll be warm, you'll be toasty most of the time. But there is, you know, I think it's beautiful, it's fun, and hey, if you live here in Minnesota, you got to find something to do. The winter's too long; you can't just stay inside all the time.
Yeah, I got to share this story with you, Scott. Many years ago, in my newspaper days, I went into the Boundary Waters in the wintertime with some folks. Last name Waters, they're very well known outfitters up there, mm-hmm. And the first night there, it was 17 below as we set up camp.
Uh-huh.
You didn't really need tents, of course, but I think we had some tents you feel a little warmer in there, which is a foolish way to, mm-hmm. but anyway. And I remember sitting around the campfire, and it was 17 below. That night, mm-hmm. we got 6 or 7 inches of real light, fluffy snow, and the temperature went up to 10 above. From 17 mm-hmm. below to 10 above, you felt like you could walk around in a T-shirt.
At 10 above. Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. You do, you know, I think you really do get acclimated, at least to an extent, and used to the cold. So.
Doesn't it amaze you about how some folks that did not have all the modern equipment that we do survived the winter? I mean, they didn't have, this wasn't just a weekend trip for them. They lived out there in teepees or you name it. You gotta wonder, how did they do it, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, no, so I love the outdoors. I love taking trips. I really like taking people out of new experiences. But one of the things that I really kind of groove on is I like history and I like learning traditional skills and primitive skills. So, you know, I put a lot of thought into that. It's what I read for fun, you know, historical documents and sort of bushcraft and traditional skills. And it's amazing, but the more you learn about it, you know, a lot of those folks really had it figured out. You look at a canvas tent with a little sheet metal stove, you know, that's what prospectors and trappers have been using northern Minnesota and in Canada for the last 150 years. And that's not just camping. You can do that indefinitely. It's a wonderful way to live, because when you get in that tent, you get the stove going, you can dry out your gear. So there's all kinds of wonderful high-tech, high-speed, modern, lightweight, sophisticated gear. But I'll tell you, for at least in the woodlands, if you're towing your gear on a toboggan and you have ample supplies of firewood, there's almost no better way to go than the traditional style with wool clothing and a stove in the tent, because you can keep going and going and going and drying out. As you know from your experiences, you know, a couple of days with sort of modern mountaineering type gear, you really run into problems with moisture, your sweat, perspiration getting frosted up in your gear, and it's tough to get that out without external heat.
We're talking with Scott Oath. Is that correct pronunciation, Scott?
Yep, that's it.
Scott Oath of Bull Moose Patrol. You teach winter survival or just outdoor survival as well, right?
I do, yes. Yeah.
Have you ever had a close call yourself that got you into that topic? Any personal experience like that?
You know, I'm out enough that there's some situations, nothing real bad. You know, I like to think I plan ahead and try and make good decisions and try to just avoid putting myself in bad situations. But I've definitely, I think, you know, I've had vehicles get stuck several times. Those are probably some of my closest ones. Like, this may be a night outside. You know, I park somewhere, it's sunny in the afternoon. You know, like you said, Ron, it's 10 above and it's nice bright day, and I'm out rabbit hunting, and I come back after dark, and guess what? It's temperatures dropped and that snow is crusted up, and also my truck's high centered, and I'm, you know, on hands and knees shoveling to dig it out. So I've had a few of those on river trips. There's been a time or two where you can see hypothermia come on very quickly. Mm-hmm. If you flip a canoe in rapids, it's cool temperatures and someone's wet, and maybe they had that adrenaline dump and now that's kind of gone out of their system. And if it's windy, a few near hypothermia type cases. And I remember way back in my Boy Scout days, you know, 30 years ago, we were doing a week-long backpacking trip in the mountains in Wyoming, and a couple of us did a side hike up to a far ridge, and we could see weather coming over. And one guy wanted to go down the backside that we had not gone, and we debated this for a long time, and luckily went back the way we came. I think about that often. What if we'd gone down that backside of the mountain that he was saying is the better way? You know?
Yeah.
I'm glad we didn't. I think it could have been a bad situation.
Well, I think you can be foolish out there, but I think what you're saying and my own experience, if you hang around the outdoors long enough doing stuff, sooner or later you're going to have, it may not be life-threatening, but you're going to have a few things where you could get in trouble, or you get in trouble momentarily and use your head and come out of it. Over the years I've done stories on duck hunters that tipped over. One survived, the other didn't. One of them was heavy set. He's the one that survived. And so there's a lesson there as well.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Well, Scott, how do people reach you if they're interested in getting involved in one of your courses or whatever?
Well, if you look up bullmoosepatrol.com, that's home base. That's our website. That's the blog. Lots of information about trips and classes and skills. My contact info is on there. So folks can give me a call or send us an email. And probably we're most active. We have a Facebook page also that's just bullmoosepatrol.com. And we have a lot of interaction with people that follow us and share photos and talk about trips and events there. So.
Well, very good. Thank you, Scott. Let me know when it gets so cold that even you don't want to go out, because then Mike Max will join you.
That's when I step in.
Good.
All right. Thanks, Scott.
Very good. Thanks for the talk, guys.
Back after this, Live Outdoors.
Sports to the max.
Welcome back. Josh Donaldson's a Minnesota Twin. Who think 4 years?
How many home runs did he hit last year?
37.
Not bad.
MVP year, he had 41. So he swings from the heels. They used to see him for Oakland and Toronto for a
long time. How many strikeouts?
Let's see here. Let's go.
Do you whiff a lot?
Where's the strikeouts? Can't find that right now.
Well, that'll add some excitement for the spring training.
He struck out 155 times last year.
Well, he likes to strike
Whoa,
out.
Whoa, man, that's a big number.
It is, yeah.
Wow, that was like you and you're a single.
Yeah, how'd you know?
So that'll get you 4 years, $92 million. Jeez.
I'll take that, too.
Okay, so coming up,
What are we looking at here?
Well, we got the
boat show.
Show coming up, but also this has been overall a tough year for ice anglers. I mean,
well, you can't win, can you?
No, you can't. Early ice, and then it went to pot. Heavy snow when the ice wasn't thick enough, and then rain on top of that, and have a lot of big slush issues. Let me tell you, I have been out on lakes where there's slush, and it's spooky.
It is spooky.
Because you're walking along.
You don't know if it's slush or if it keeps going down.
Exactly. Yeah. You go through, and you never know. It can go right over your muckluck.
Yes. Not,
mucklucks or your sorrel boots. It can be deep.
Yes.
And it's
deep even with the bottom, even though there's a nice bottom to it.
Yeah. I mean, I've been on winter camping trips where we had six snowmobiles and three of them didn't get back because they got stuck in the slush and there was no manly way to get them out of
there. What do you do then?
Well, we kept going, and then later they waited for some of the slush that you stir up freezes overnight then, finally. And then you go out with another heavier sled and hook it up and pull.
So you have to hope that it gets cold enough to freeze in, basically,
right.
And then you hook it up and pull it out?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's no fun. It's no fun.
But when it first goes in, what do you try to do? Are you smart enough to not even try to get close to it? What do you do?
Well, you got
to
keep going. You don't know where it ends and where it stops.
So you're driving along and your buddy, you just kept going?
You got to hit the throttle.
What about your buddy that was on the machine that's in the slush?
Well, supposedly he's got to do the same thing. And if you don't do it fast enough, too bad. We'll see you, Mike, out there. We'll come back next spring.
Where was this or this happened to you?
Basswood Lake.
Which is where?
Up at Ely, Basswood Lake.
Wow.
Camping in the Boundary Waters. But it can happen anywhere. I was also in Canada with Bill Rahm and not a float plane. He has his Super Cub on skis. And we landed on this lake, not realizing that it was also covered with slush.
Canada.
Yeah. And you didn't notice it till the plane started slowing down, and then the weight of the plane started going into the snow, and then water was flying up behind the skis. They go, oh, my God, there's no, first I thought we were going down, but that was just the slush boiling up behind the skis, so then we got stopped. And I had a camera guy with me, Earl Seibert from the Star Tribune, myself, and Bill, the pilot, said, I got to get out of here. I can't stay here, but you guys, you're going to have to walk out because I can't get off the lake with the slush and you in this airplane.
How deep is the water?
Well, the slush was like a foot deep.
So you're close enough to shore that it was only a foot deep, so you got out, or it was just slush on top of ice?
Slush on top of the ice, yeah. And so I remember we each held a wingtip as he revved up the propeller until we couldn't hold it anymore, and he just blew off the lake, and he was off
really
100 yards, yeah. But there we had a walk now.
And what'd you do? Walk into?
Walked across a portage to get to another lake where he knew he could land. And let me tell you, sometimes we're like wading in snow up to our hips.
So you knew. So he basically said, "I'll meet you over there."
Yeah.
Get over there,
right.
And I know I can.
Right.
But this was probably pre intricate communications, right? Wasn't like you had cell phones going.
No.
Had to say, "Hey, get to that lake," and you hope that he came around and got you.
No, he just said, "Go around this corner. There should be a portage there." Well, you can't see any portage. There's three or four feet of snow, but you do know. There was a creek there, which typically portages would follow from the creek coming from one lake to another. So we don't know if we were on the portage or not. We were close, and then we got him on the other side, and he wasn't there. So then we wondered, are we going to spend the night here?
Yeah, because, and if we got the wrong one, do we turn around, or where do we go here?
Well,
yeah.
You're partly exhausted by now.
Exactly. So what happened? Eventually he saw you, or what?
Well, then what it was, it looked like an optical. We were looking at an optical illusion. We thought the far side of the lake was all continuous shore.
Yeah.
But it really wasn't. It was a point. And the point went. And so he came around.
Oh, so you just couldn't see him.
You couldn't see him. But then he got out of his airplane and walked and waved at us, and we saw him. That was a very welcome sight, I'll tell you.
So he landed it on ice then, or on what?
There was a lake there that didn't have the slush problem.
But it had ice.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it was plenty of ice. This was dead winter. And you know what we did overnight?
I thought I'd heard all your good stories. I've never heard this one.
I haven't even told you about all the big fish I've caught. we had.
It's too bad we got to run.
I don't have enough time. Yeah, we're gonna have to. We'll continue this story another time. You got to get out of here, buddy. In just a few seconds.
Really good story. When we come back, we'll talk about Josh Donaldson being a Minnesota Twin, plus Phoenix Sproles from North Dakota State, and the guy signed Miguel Sano all in the 8 o'clock hour.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.